I don't know, after that and singing about cosmic slime, hardly need a sermon here, it feels like, but I think you'd make feel cheated, so I'll pontificate at you. How about that? I love that lonesome critter. This is my home. I love the story of evolution. It's nice to be among my fellow evolutionaries this morning. I find it an inspiring story. I find it a challenging story. And it's at the heart of my spiritual sense of who I am and what Unitarian Universalism is about. It's at the core of my understanding of how the world and the cosmos works. And it always feels a bit like a resurrection story to me, forms of life passing on, new forms of life emerging, and this is happening constantly. I don't know why Earth Day ended up in April. Maybe somebody will tell me that after the service today, but it does make sense to me for Earth Day to be in April, because in spring, in mud season, this story of new life arising seems so obviously apparent, and inconveniently and messily apparent too. Life always in process, and lots of it is about muck and slime and lonesome critters crawling about. Evolution is not a neat process. I think that lots of us humans resist this not neatness of the process, as well as the fact that it's a process. But I do believe that some understanding of evolution is necessary. James Krupa, who is a professor of biology at the University of Kentucky, when he's not pulling any punches, he'll say that he teaches evolution because, quote, the fewer who understand evolution, the more will die. Yike. We need to understand evolution. One small example. If we understand evolution, we can understand how the overuse of antibacterials is creating resistant strands of bacteria. That's an evolutionary process. If we avoid the idea of evolution, that makes it easier for us to avoid how we are, in fact, making the world a more and more untenable place for human life and lots of other life. Every year, Professor Krupa teaches evolution to students who are non-majors in biology, and lots of these students think that what he's teaching is heresy, and I am thankful for his work, and I pity him his task. Pity is probably the wrong tack to take there, because it really should be my task, too, a task belonging to all of us as part of a faith like Unitarian Universalism that takes evolution seriously. I had a friend actually post just a couple of days ago on Facebook. She's just had a baby. She's actually a cousin a couple of marriages removed from me. And she's just had a baby and posted this article about why babies don't sleep 8 hours through the night. And it's evidently the person in this article is saying how this is related to how we came to be. It's part of our evolutionary story. It has to do with something about being once hunter-gatherers. It has something to do with being born so early in our stage of development. And then another cousin, a couple of marriages removed, commented on the post saying, wow, this is would be a great article, except that it promotes evolution. God made babies the way they are, not evolution. It's up to all of us to teach this evolutionary faith. I wish I had, like, the answer for how to do that. I guess all I know is that there's one lesson of evolution that is most important when it comes to trying to engage in a conversation like this, and it has to do with humility. One of the most important lessons that I think evolution teaches us is humility. Evolution is a story of life, and like the Copernican revolution, which takes the Earth away from the center of our understanding of the universe, evolution takes people out of the center of the story of life. We're just part of this big tree of life, and we're just a branch on that tree. No, not even a branch, really, kind of a twig off of a branch on a really huge tree with more branches than we can possibly count. My colleague William Murray writes that evolution is a religious story because it calls us out of our little self-centered worlds and enables us to see ourselves as part of a great living system that we call the cosmos. We like to put ourselves at the center of things. We like to think that we're the ones that have it all figured out. We are the pinnacle of development. That is dangerous. In the past, captivated by an understanding of evolution heaped high with hubris and self-importance, there were a good many Unitarians who, in the early 20th century, strayed into eugenics. When there were two Unitarians on the United States Supreme Court, Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr. and William Howard Taft, they were two of the votes in favor of state-ordered sterilization in the case of Buck versus Bell in 1927. As it is described by UU historian Mark Harris in his book, Elite, a woman named Carrie Buck had been raised in foster care, raped, became pregnant, and had given birth all before the age of 17. She was considered part of a, quote, shiftless, ignorant, and worthless class. And so she became subject to the Virginia state sterilization law that was on the books at the time. Virginia was not unusual in having a law like that on the books. I hope that it confounds you that such a decision would be made at all, much less be part of our Unitarian Universalist history. Just before Darwin published his own work, he was reading the work of someone else, a little worried that someone else had gotten to publish ideas of his before he did, and he was relieved that the ideas were different, but in the book that he was reading, he slipped a piece of paper, and on that piece of paper he wrote, "Never use the word higher or lower. Never use the word higher or lower." Darwin also wrote in a letter, "Heaven, defend me from the nonsense of a tendency to progression." We like to think we're the pinnacle, we're the things that everything has been striving towards. He also wrote in a letter, a quote that I've lost. It's about interconnection. Don't put people at the center. Anthropocentrism is a mistake when you're understanding evolution. He probably was more witty than that. I'm glad that Darwin wrote such things. Unfortunately, he was not free himself from feelings of superiority and from activating on them. part of the mistake that these Unitarians made, these Unitarians who were eugenics enthusiasts, they forgot the lesson from evolution that we're all interconnected, we're all interdependent. This is an article of evolutionary faith. The universalist Clarence Russell Skinner, who taught at Tufts for a while, was for a time sympathetic to eugenics. He loved the idea of progress. Don't we all love the idea of progress? But eventually he realized that social ills are not the fault of individuals, but of unjust social conditions that we all have a hand in creating and maintaining. Eventually, he wrote in a document called Declaration of Social Principles, he wrote, "With equal rights for all and special privilege for none, we are interdependent with one another." That is one of the things that evolution teaches us. I like taking that notion of independence a little bit further. We're not only interdependent with everything that's existing now, there's a connection to the past. In 1925, which was the same year that John Scopes was on trial in Tennessee for teaching evolution, that's when Unitarian minister Jabez Sunderland wrote, "Evolution teaches us as no other thought can do. The past belongs to us, a heritage infinitely rich and precious." I like the way this idea is brought vividly to life in the work of the paleontologist Neil Shubin. According to Shubin, "I have an inner fish. You have an inner fish. I have an inner reptile and an inner primate. We all do." He put together a public television series on this. It was called Your Inner Fish. He published a book by that same name too, Your Inner Fish. The thing he's probably most famous for is finding this fossil of a transitional creature, a fish that was crawling out onto the land and had a shoulder that's like ours and had a neck. Fishes don't have necks. This creature had a neck when it crawled out of the water. I love this stuff. The basic structure of our hand appears first in the evolutionary record in fish, and the fish were the first to test out backbones and heads and skin. Skin was experimented with reptiles. They're the ones who started really experimenting with skin. And there's parts of our DNA that are like bacteria and worms, and it does the same thing in them that it does with us. I find this completely amazing. We carry a whole past with us. We are interdependent with this past. Yes, evolution does teach us that everything is changing, but it also teaches us that we carry our past with us. As a minister, I'm prone to taking analogies and metaphors too far. It's a danger of the profession. But I'm thinking about our backbone now. If we carry our past with us, and everything is changing, and we're called to the future, I'm thinking about our backbone. The fish critters came up with the backbone. They dragged it out of the water. Then reptiles and mammals crawled around the earth with it. And then at some point, we decided to stand up. And you can't just stand it straight up like that, because the balance doesn't work out and you fall over, because all your organs are hanging out in front of this thing that they used to just hang from. I mean, that seems like a better structure, doesn't it? You know, horizontal, and they hang down from that. You stand that thing up, and then what do you have to do to the back? You have to put a curve in it here, and you have to put another curve up by your head. And any structural engineer will tell you this is just an accident waiting to happen. How many of you have had trouble with your back at some point in your life? 80% of us have back problems at some point in our lives. It's not always easy to be carrying our past around with us. That backbone is causing us problems. And, you know, I'm not really proud about that whole eugenics thing as much as I need to remember that that's part of me too. We need some backbone. Enough backbone to actually admit that we're not at the center of things. Enough backbone to actually admit that change is what we are called to participate in. My colleague Frederick Murr draws the conclusion that we must actively promote sustainability for all living things, or the evolutionary process will do it without us. Things go extinct is another thing that we have to realize when we take evolution seriously. It's not about us, it's about life, and it will keep going whether or not we're here. We need to be bold in our acceptance of change. And I'm a little inspired, actually, by the evolutionary story about how much change can happen. You know that little bone that's in your ear that helps you hear? It used to be a big bone in the jaw of fish. That's a huge change. Like, how would that even happen? Like, if you were thinking about it, looking at this fish, you're going, oh, this huge bone, I think that we can use that to hear with. There's a fierce unrest at the core of all living things. Great things can happen. The evolutionary story is a story to celebrate. I love that critter crawling out of the ocean and calling out in his drawl, "This is my home," in that Gentle Arms of Eden song by Dave Carter. I especially appreciate that song because as happy as it is, as celebratory as it is, it's not without its recognition of the situation that we're in. Sure, there's happy critters and there's a nice harvest and people are singing, and then there's factories and greed and pollution. And what happens next in that song? "I will lay my burdens in the cradle of your grace, in the shining beaches of your love, in the sea of your embrace. This is my home." The song doesn't tell us what comes next after the war and pollution bit. We're still caught up in the war and pollution bit. That's the part that we're called to participate in. That's the part that we, my fellow evolutionaries, we are called to help make happen. What our faith will look like going forward, what our society will look like going forward, I don't know. But it'll take bold experiments, a willingness to try out an extra limb here and maybe a prehensile toe there, and to shed them if at some point we realize that wasn't the right thing to do. We need to be comfortable with that fierce unrest. We need to welcome a stinging discomfort that will propel us to leap from star to star. Our evolutionary faith is a faith that will return us to the world and to one another again and again in wonder and in celebration. This is the only sacred ground that I have ever known. With wonder and celebration in our evolutionary faith, let's turn our critter faces toward the future and gladly make ourselves co-workers with God. Amen. Evolution, of course, operates on the level of individuals. But individuals also gather together into institutions. And this institution needs to evolve. One way we do that is by offering the opportunity for generosity. Members and friends support our congregation with an annual pledge paid throughout the year. Another way to support the good work of this congregation is by making a generous donation as we pass the plates and enjoy this 450-year-old music.